Welcome to the Dope Black Woman podcast, the podcast where we share stories of Black excellence as part of our safe digital sisterhood. I'm Leanne Levos.
I'm Rashan, but you can call me Shan.
I'm Livs.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of your favorite podcast with your girl Livs, Leanne and Rashan all together here again. Just to have a little catch up, really, just have a little check in. So I want to start with the obvious. How do you guys feel about lockdown coming to an end, about, you know, what that means for everyone? Do you think it's a good thing for everyone?
Wait, are you guys going back into office, or are you going to do like blended half week working in office, half week working out of office? What's the plan for re-entry into the normal world on your side?
I mean, I haven't been told a plan yet. I don't think most businesses actually have a plan in place. But I think
some of them do. Oh. My friend literally said to me today, she was like, I now need to start applying for new jobs because I'm going to be expected by whatever date it is to be going back into work full time.
Damn.
Wow. Honestly, some people are itching for the... Because imagine you're paying for these big buildings. You're paying the huge rent, the huge electricity bill with like five people in it. They want to fill it back up. But as for me, I know that if I've been able to function and do my job be above adequately for the past how many months, then I can continue to do it like this. So I would be asking for flexibility allowances when it comes to how I'm working, because I do not want to be traveling into work and being in the office. I just don't.
True. Well, what's funny about that is that when I moved here, everybody was doing remote working. And now that people are starting to go back into the office, I had a meeting with our exec team earlier last week. And so everybody was like, what's the plan for coming back into the office? And my boss was like, well, people can just come in whenever they feel like. And I was like, all right, cool. That means I am never coming in.
Honestly.
Pretty much.
No. Honestly, look, I go in now once a week, yeah? But earlier this week, we put a post on Instagram about what it's like going into work with your afro, yeah? And there was lots of people commenting and engaging and basically, I guess, sympathising and relating with each other about this experience. And it wasn't until I looked in the mirror today and I was like, rah, my hair really isn't an afro. Like, just chilling, just however it decides to fall or not fall or poke this way or stick that way, it's just chilling. If I had to go to work this morning, yeah, I could not have gone to work like this. Do you get it? Well, the truth is I could have gone to work like this, but I wouldn't have felt comfortable to have gone to work like this. Do you get it? So it's like I have a sense of freedom. I'm so more relaxed. Even if I am doing more work, working from home, my mood is much better than it normally would. Than having to go in.
Yeah, and I love being able to work in my pajamas and just sit how I want to sit, because like I'm not gonna like even sit in an office, like there's numerous studies how it's not good for your back, like it's not good for your posture, like all of that kind of stuff. I suppose the point I was trying to get at is, if the majority of people worked from home, what about, you know, like the cleaners, and what about like the kitchen staff and like all those jobs that would become
obsolete?
They would just evaporate.
But they wouldn't, though, because you can now clean someone's house. Do you get what I mean? You can now be a personal chef.
Like, you can afford a cleaner.
But the jobs that you're mentioning, I kid you not, there are definitely jobs like that if they were to go, it wouldn't work. For example, if you look at the retail industry, yeah, if everything closed down and it became online, where on earth do those people go? They absolutely... I don't know where they're going to go. But with a job like a cleaner or a cook, that is so easy. You can go to a nursery. As an example, do you get what I mean? You can go to the airport. Like, there's so many other places you can apply for jobs.
I suppose. I mean, I do take Liv's point, to be honest, to say that a lot of people in the immediate future would lose their job, and it would take them a while potentially to find somewhere else to go. But if you did blended working, where some people are coming in sometimes, or people who have to come in, because some people do have to go in to do their jobs. Not everybody, but some people do. Then they should do blended working.
Yeah, no, I didn't say that. And also, I don't know if you guys misheard me, but I didn't say, like, I think they should never allow people to go back into the office. I said I, Rashan Roberts, would not be returning full time. I didn't talk about anyone else's decision. I don't care if they made everyone in the company decide to go back. Me, I, Rashan Roberts, have no need to go in. Based on the current role that I'm in now, I have no need to go in every single day. I currently go in one day a week and I love it. I don't mind even upping it to 2 days a week. But is it necessary for me to go in 5 days a week? Absolutely not. It's not. And that's my point. I hope that what they do, they look at the, I hope that businesses and entrepreneurs or whoever is in charge of how people work actually consider how people work to the best of their ability. For some people, it's in an office. Mm. Some people don't have the discipline to work at home and not be distracted by their mum cooking macaroni and cheese downstairs. They want to go to the pot and try it. Do you get what I mean? Other people, no, but no. Do you understand what I'm saying? No, but do you understand what I'm saying? Obviously, that's just a random thing. But do you get what I mean? Some people, like, the door will knock. They'll now start talking to their neighbour about the person who's cheating down the road. And now it's been 2 hours and they forgot to bloody submit their email on time or whatever it is. And then there's people like me who are just more disciplined to work at home than going into the office. Do you get it? But I've always said it, though. It's just, for me, it's working in London. Like, if I live somewhere where I could just, like, Birmingham. I used to live in Birmingham. If I was based in Birmingham now, and I could just drive to the town centre and park and go to work freely without it costing £15 for congestion charge, £55 million for parking each day, I would absolutely do that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But I don't have that. I don't have that luxury, unfortunately. That's
fair. Yeah. I will say that people who have to, you know, travel on public transport in large cities, and I think London is notorious for it. It can literally ruin your whole day. Just sitting on the tube, packed up, and like, people can be so rude and so nasty. And like, yeah, you can go into work and it's like, wow, I'm already pissed off. And it's like, it's not even lunchtime yet. I can't even now eat my lunch to make myself feel better. I have to sit here and start work. Like, the amount of times I've ran into someone on the tube and they've just been so rude, like people bumping into you on purpose or like pushing past you.
The armpit's in your face and you can see your armpit in my face. You can feel my head, my forehead knocking your armpit. Like, what is going on? It's just rude. Like, I feel like when you're in your own space, yeah, you have more control over your mood.
True.
And I am someone, yeah, my mood can be easily swayed very quickly. And what that means is it can go to like the negative side, then back to the positive side in like 2.5 seconds. But why should I even have to take that risk of it going to the negative side? And it's like, when I started this job, I remember saying to the team, like, I don't like starting at 9 a.m. And they were like, oh, why? Oh, you like to sleep in late? And I just let them run a bit. But because I thought no one would understand the reason why. And it wasn't until I started being more open and I said, look, when you come to work late because you've got a doctor's appointment at 11 a.m., do you not feel like a lot more relaxed and happier than when you have to get to work at 8:30 a.m. or 9 a.m. and you're in the rush hour? I said, I want you to just think about those two experiences and how different you feel in your body and just as a person on those 2 days. And then there was a day when we had to go in at those times and it just happened to be busy. And they were both like, okay, yeah, cool, I actually get what you mean. Like, it's actually a fact. Like, who wants to go to work and you're waiting 15 minutes to get on your tube and now you're late and now you're walking into the office late and everyone's thinking you was unprepared this morning when actually the DLR just doesn't run frequently in your area? Do you get what I mean? Like, yeah,
or like you're paying for a ticket to stand. Like, I don't even have the luxury of sitting down during this journey. Like, I'm standing.
For 20 stops, you know? No, it's very rude.
It's true.
It used to take me an hour and a half each way to get to work. No. So an hour and a half to get there and an hour and a half to get back.
No.
And if I caught the train just even 10 minutes late, so let's say at 7:20 instead of 7, I literally would not be able to sit down the entire way. Oh. Right? And it just used to piss me off to no end. So yeah, Shan is right, because by the time I would get to work, I needed a break. I was like, all right, now it's time for me to go.
Leanne's having fake cigarette breaks. I don't smoke, but honestly, I'm just going to go out anyway.
I need a cup of tea. I need to go to the toilet.
Exactly.
I need to make myself comfortable.
Nah, Livs takes ages to start work, you know. Livs comes in and she'll be like, I need to the post office. One sec. Then she'll come back and be like, I need to get snacks. One sec. Then she'll come back and be like, now I need a cup of tea. And then she'll start work. Like, Livs will be doing her errands.
Yeah, and by 11 o'clock is when you actually get going. It's true.
I don't know how it works if you're in Jamaica, because you obviously travel to work by a car now. But when you was in the UK, you obviously traveled by train. And when you factor in things like a coffee you might get on the way, and then you might get a muffin to go with your coffee, and a bottle of water you get on the way home because the journey's long, then you might get a packet of Starbucks.
Oh my—
do you get what I mean? The croissant from Starbucks is £4.99 because they're so teeth. Like, when you factor in, for me, being in— true— London still, when I factor in all of those maybe things I get on the way, I think I save a lot of money, even though I still probably buy more at home.
I think at least once a week, I used to stop and have dinner by myself at like a—
really?—
fancy restaurant in London.
First,
yeah, just once a week.
once a week. Like,
it was just to kill the time, though, because I would be waiting on the train to eat the traffic to ease up.
You don't have to kill the time in a fancy restaurant.
It's called self-care, okay?
Self-care. You have a self-care.
Honestly, that's a self-addiction. That's not self-care. That is self-addiction. When we're saying fancy restaurant, how fancy are we talking?
Fancy enough that I would spend, like, for myself, including alcohol, because obviously I would have a glass of wine.
How is that obvious?
Or a caipirinha. probably like £30-40.
Oh, that's not as bad as I thought you were going to say.
No, not like £100. Well, yeah, just for me.
But what are you ordering? Sorry, what are you ordering?
So there's this sushi place. I don't know if anybody's ever been there, but there's this sushi place right outside Liverpool Street. I can't remember what it's called right now, but it's attached to the hotel that's literally right beside. I think it's a Marriott or a Hilton or something like that. And they have the best cocktails. They serve the best caipirinhas and they have the best sushi.
Oh my gosh.
I used to go there all the time.
On that note, when you're back, because you're back soon. Leanne's back soon, guys. We need a cocktail date. We need a cocktail date, okay?
Guys, literally, as we're speaking, someone just sent me an Instagram post. Confirmed, all legal restrictions to be removed on July 19. No more mandatory masks, no more social distancing, stadiums and festivals back to full capacity, clubs and strip clubs set to open on July 19th.
Wow, that's soon.
Table service and QR code scanning gone. Yeah, that's literally maybe like a week after I get there.
Okay, so basically that day before the rules change back, we need to go on a bar crawl, find ourselves in a strip club, go to a night bar. We need to do everything, all right? All right.
So what else have you guys been doing during lockdown? Have you guys been reading more? Have you been exploring your, you know, personal development? Have you been finding yourself?
Oh, will you say something?
Oh, I mean, there's that too. Shan thought I was going to say something sexual, but...
Of course she did.
But no, not today.
Not today. Personally, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts about grief. And I found that super helpful. For regular listeners, we know that my dad died in November. And there's actually a theory that I have been reading into a lot lately, which I'd love to share with you guys, which is the dual process model. And basically, the idea is that there are two different ways of behaving. Like, either you kind of enjoy the now and you enjoy the day to day, or you kind of like allow your subconscious to take over. And so those are the days where you kind of just will own self-pity and just allow yourself to be sad and just eat snacks and watch Netflix all day. And it's like, this theory is basically the idea that you need both of those things in order to function. And there's no like end date. Like, it just goes on and on, that both, like, you just seesaw between the two. And I feel like that's something you could apply not just to grief, but like just life in general. And I'm sure, you know, as we're entering a quote unquote new normal, whatever that's going to look like and feel like, you know, I think it's important for people to remember that it's not just going to be like, okay, now I'm absolutely fine. Lockdown's over. Like, we're back to normal. I'm all good. Because, like, obviously, and quite rightly so, there's been a lot of talk about mental health throughout the pandemic. And I think, yeah, I guess it's just important that those conversations continue. They don't just like stop because lockdown's stopping.
No, that's definitely true. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense, actually. I think one of the things, whenever somebody that's close to me loses someone, I always refrain from saying, oh, you know, it will get better with time. Because as you just said, it never really does. You just learn how to cope better and you do different things to distract yourself. But it's not something that ever really goes away. And so it is that kind of constant, like, peak and trough, wave and dip. So that actually makes sense. It's kind of, I don't know if it's encouraging that that's the case or if it's kind of more depressing. Like, I don't know if telling people that makes them feel better or if they want to believe that it will get better with time. Because the idea that it's just a never-ending process can be quite daunting sometimes, you know? It's like, gosh, when will it ever end?
I feel like grief is such a hard thing to navigate. Like, So my stepdad's dad passed away on the weekend, but he passed away the day before his mum passed away. Does that make sense? So in this, I know this is going to sound very morbid, yeah? But in my head, I thought it's kind of comforting in a way that they passed away. Although they're no longer together, I thought it was kind of comforting that they're kind of like, they passed away at the same time of year. So that when it came to like high points of grief or high points of mourning, you had them at the same time, rather than one being in like July and then the other one being like December. Do you get what I mean?
Wow.
But I was like, I can't tell someone that when they're grieving. But that's just what I just thought in my head. And I was like, but there's absolutely nothing I can say to anybody who is grieving. Like, I feel like when it comes to supporting someone, I don't feel like there's anything that ever actually provides any level of comfort. And I mean, so you guys have both lost a parent. And with that said, is there anything that you think actually helped you, or anything that someone said that actually stuck out? Because if I lost a parent, I wouldn't want anyone to speak to me about it at all, ever.
I guess that's the thing. It's such an individual thing, right? Mm. Like, you might not want someone to talk to you about it at all, but other people, that might be the only thing they want to do, is just talk about it all the time, you know. And then it is such an individual thing. So maybe it's just more about asking people what they want or what they need, and then knowing, letting people know that if they do need anything at any point in time, that they can reach out to you, and maybe doing a check-in every now and again. I don't know. Because I wanted to be alone at first, and then now it's actually really weird, but I kind of make jokes about it. I don't make jokes, but I tell funny stories that happened while my parents were sick, to not to make light of it, but just as a way of, I always feel like I don't want to burden people with the nitty gritty stories of the things that happened while I was taking care of them. So I kind of try to find the humor in it. And that's still a way of me being able to share without like burdening or making anybody feel upset or sad about, you know, my experiences.
Yeah. I think that you definitely have to allow yourself to laugh through the hard times and to be able to find the funny moments and stuff. And like, so one of my close friends, her dad died maybe 7 years ago. And we have this joke, we're like, dead dad's club. Like, we're part of the dead parents club now. And wow.
My jaw actually dropped. And my eyes popped open out of my head. I said, excuse me.
But it's funny because it's like, I feel like death makes people so uncomfortable. And so when you allow yourself to be able to talk about death, it's so freeing. Yes. Like, you have this I don't give a fuck attitude. Because it's like, you know, if I can talk about death without being uncomfortable, it just makes you so much more like, I don't know, I feel a bit liberated almost. Like, there isn't anything I'm scared to, like, I'm not scared to say my mind. Mm-hmm. I'm not scared. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that notion actually applies to trauma in general.
So yeah,
as much as I was very shocked when you first said it, when I applied it to like a traumatic experience that I've had, I get it a lot.
We and always go trauma,
trauma. It's almost like you're gaining control over that experience and that emotion, isn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's very true. Actually, it is a way of gaining control over the situation.
Because like your body or the world or like everything combined wants you to feel sad, and of course you still feel sad about it. But the ability to find light in it, in whatever capacity that is a massive form of control, I feel like, and growth.
Yeah.
I would say in terms of advice or things I've kind of learned, like one of the big ones is definitely like, you know, as you said, a lot of people are scared kind of what to say or the right thing to say, or like, how is this going to come out? So I didn't say anything. And what I say to people is like, look, however awkward you feel, I feel worse. So don't even worry about it. Like, I'm not going to think you're this terrible person. I'm going to just be grateful you said it. Don't overthink it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, don't overthink it. Like, whatever you say, I'm going to be like, thank you. Like, I'm not going to turn around and be like, how dare you? Like, because you're just trying your best. Like, you're just trying to comfort me.
No, I was just going to say, to be honest, there is one thing that you should probably never do when somebody's grieving. So I remember, this has happened to me twice, actually. Once when my mom passed and once when one of my dearest friends, Abeng, passed away. Someone came and they were like, oh, you know, I'm so sorry. And I was like, thank you. You know, I appreciate it. And then they started bawling. And so now I'm consoling the person who has come to give me their condolences.
Mm.
So if I'm not crying, you need to not cry. Like, you need to hold it together and keep it Yeah.
I think what Livs has said is actually the approach that I do, where I always ask them, like, how do you, like, what support can I... Actually, Liv said something, and then you said something earlier about Leanne, about, like, asking them what you can, have, like, offer to do. So my friend's sister passed away the other day, and I said to her, like, when it comes to death, I don't really know the best way to navigate it, to support someone. But just like in any other capacity of our friendship, I'm here to support you. So let me know whatever you can do, whatever it is you need from me, and I'll do that. And I literally said that to her, like, all the time, and then try to also do other helpful things that I thought would benefit her. But I just think in general, it's just so hard to navigate. Because I remember when I lost a close friend of mine when I was really, really young. And I think this is why I find it hard to support other people. Because when I lost a really close friend of mine, who was literally like my brother, like I knew him since I was born, like since birth, yeah. And he passed away because of knife crime, and it wasn't to do with him or anything like that. And I remember one of my friends said to me, oh, well, you know, at least it wasn't your blood brother. And I knew in my whole heart, my friend did not mean that in a dismissive way. She really was trying to support me and like make me feel better, but it just didn't. Like, it was it's really irrelevant whether he was blood or not. I don't call anyone, well, no, I don't, I call very few people my sister or a word like family. Like, best friend and those sort of terms you can use loosely, but to associate someone with like a family term to me is really, really important. So for me, it was just like, my feelings wasn't even taken in consideration from any capacity. That's what it felt like. Although I know that from healing from that situation, that wasn't what it was. So I always fear that, like, I'm going to accidentally say something to someone that will make them feel like that.
How, do you mind me asking, Rishan, how old you were when your friend passed away?
I was in college. So I think I was 17. I was 17.
Because yeah, I was going to say one of the things I've kind of, I mean, many things I've learned from now becoming like...
I was 18.
But like one of the things I've learned, like from taking on board, like listening to so many grief podcasts, I feel like I'm an expert now. It's like, you know, obviously when you lose someone young, maybe the reason why you now find it difficult to talk about grief is just like, it's so hard to like wrap your mind around all the thoughts of grief when you're that age. And as well, people are like your peers don't really understand death either. So they're more likely to say those things that come across as insensitive, even though they don't mean it, because like they don't have much experience of death either. Yeah. So it's like trying to be supported by people and trying to understand something that you just like when you're young, just feels so foreign. Like the idea of that someone could just suddenly disappear and die just feels so like.
Yeah, I think that really yeah. is spot on, especially when it comes to like knife crime, because like the type of friends that I have and like where I grew up, that wasn't something that I expected to happen. If that makes, I know it's very naive because anyone can die at the hands of a knife or a gun or anything like that. But you know, do you get what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I feel like I don't know if it's problematic or not. I feel like some people will live in certain areas and it will feel very, feel very apparent to them. Like the idea or hearing someone die of knife crime or those sort of things won't be like a shock. Do you get what I mean? Whereas this was like, this was so triggering on so many levels. And I remember at the time I was at Brit, I was in college, and it took over my whole life in the sense that like I wanted to do everything to now combat knife crime. I joined like a knife crime charity. I made all of my products around knife crime, to the point where my teachers had to sit with me and be like, we understand like this is important to you. We get that you really want to like have memories of your friend and, you know, use your creativity to be like an outlet and stuff. But if you keep making everything about them, you're never going to be able to heal. And I remember at that time thinking like, oh, why don't they want me to tell his
what
story?
Do you know,
why
like
do you know what I mean? I was so upset, like, that way I ruined my life. But actually they helped me a lot. It helped a lot, and I was able to find my own way to process it at the time, I think. But it took a long time. So I feel like when someone passes, there's so many elements, there's so many like stages to it. And I think even if you had nothing to do with it, you still, well, for me anyway, I still felt a level of guilt. Do you get what I mean? So like the week before he passed away, I had seen him, and we was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna see you next week. And then we didn't. And then that happened. And I was like, oh, if only I had seen him, or if only I messaged on that day, or if only that happened. And it was like, I could have still done that. And that unfortunate situation could have still happened. But I still somehow wanted to take the level of guilt and put it on myself, even though it had nothing to do with me. Can you guys relate to that?
For sure. Oh, 100%. Yeah, guilt is very much often wrapped up in grief. Like, it's so easy to be like, if only this had happened, if only I had said that. I've only had time to do this. Like, it's very natural, I would say. Yeah.
But it's hindsight, right? And you don't know. I guess we always say, oh, if I had done this. But the truth is, if you had done that and then he didn't answer the phone, just as a random example, you probably still would have felt as guilty. You know, it's like, oh, why didn't I call back a second time? Or why didn't I send him a text message? There's always going to be something that you felt in hindsight that you could have done. But you don't know whether that would have made... You could have made that call and then you guys would have had a fight. And then he would have, that would have happened to him. And then you would have felt guilty about the fact that you guys had a fight right before he passed. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hindsight is something that kills the joy of pretty much anything that you can think of.
Yeah.
So... Mm.
And breathe.
And breathe. I wanted to also like mention, like, since we're talking about just like lockdown and about grief, and obviously there are like different forms of grief. It doesn't have to be like someone has passed away. This new normal that we're going to enter into, like a lot of people have like lost their jobs, like a lot of people like broke down relationships, and like almost, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like, Poor child. I definitely I'm just adding you. No, I'm joking. I love
she
you.
She said
girl.
There's some people like Rashan
But I definitely feel like a level of anxiety, and I suppose it comes back to, as we talked about at the beginning, like working from home. So being so used to being in your safe space, in your environment, day in, day out, and suddenly it's like the world is opening back up again. And I'm a bit like, ooh, am I ready? Like, am I ready? I don't want people to see me just yet. Like, I thought I was going to lose this corona weight. She's still here. Like, she's
weight
still
is waiting.
Oh, she should have gone last lockdown, but she's here. She's chilling.
She don't pay rent.
It's like, she doesn't pay rent, but she has a home here. And it's like, yeah, that kind of like the world opening up again. And I don't know, I have some like nervous tendencies about it.
About like being in social spaces in general, or like just navigating what's meant to be normality?
Both. Like even today as an example, I was on the bus and like the bus was starting to get crowded. It's kind of like, oh, like, can we sit next to each other? And the person next to me wasn't wearing a mask and I was, and I felt really uncomfortable because it's a bit like... Get away.
The thing is, yeah.
And before, like... I wouldn't even think about that kind of thing.
I think for me, I've never liked that stuff anyway, like point blank period. So pre-COVID, I didn't want anyone to sit next to me. I didn't want you to sit next to me on the bus. I didn't want you to touch me.
Put your bag down.
I didn't want people close to me. So I feel like because that was me normally, going back, like those sort of things, I don't think I will notice as much because that's how I've always been. Do you get what I mean?
Mm.
So like someone wearing a mask or not wearing a mask, I feel indifferent to.
But I still don't want him to sit beside me either way.
Yes, exactly.
No, even when I go to the bathroom, in a public bathroom, I'm always like, why are you coming into the stall right next to me? There's a whole other stall like, two doors down.
Do you know what I mean? I don't sit on the toilet seat in my own house. It's just me here. Do you get it? So, like, the toilets are brand new. I don't sit on the seat. So when it comes to hygiene and things like that, I'm very, like, scornful. So, like, I just don't think it's going to change with me, basically.
Shan, stop it right now.
Legs them strong. Of course, yeah.
Listen, Megan with the good knees.
Good knees, come forward. I just, yeah, but I do get what you mean, though, on a practical level. Like, I do get what you mean, especially when we look at things like, not things that are extreme, but, like, let's say a festival now where there's going to be loads of people, wireless, where everyone's, like, crowding to see their favourite artists. That's going to feel so different when, for the last year, you didn't crowd anywhere. Do you know what I mean? Like, what was you crowding around the pot to get a potato? Like, there was no crowding. So it's like, now I feel like naturally, I feel like most people are going to be, even if they're not going to be affected by it, I feel like they're definitely going to have a consciousness or awareness about the change.
Yeah, clubbing is going to be a very strange experience.
I don't even know if I know how to whine anymore. Like, I haven't danced in such a long time.
Honestly.
I saw a video of me dancing. This is me. I don't know if the alcohol made it worse. Oh, I just can't dance, but boy, I need help.
Oh, honestly. And just like, being in a crowded space with people and like you're dancing and they're dancing. It's like, they used to be like my thing. And now I'm like,
You can't live alone no more.
Wait, can we rewind for a second with Shan with the good knees? So, and this might be a bit of a TMI question.
Oh my gosh.
when you're in your bathroom, like your personal bathroom, and you're taking a number two, you don't sit on the toilet?
Oh, no, I sit then. Yeah, but I just line it.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Okay. All right, cool. That's understandable. I was just like,
I can't tell you, the last time I sat on the seat, it must have been I was on a potty. I feel so awkward, yeah. I feel so awkward when I go to like my friend's house. Because you know, like, as girls, yeah, like, you'll go in the bathroom with each other, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I might be going to the toilet and then someone's doing their mascara. I don't know what it is. And I feel really awkward going to my friend's house or being in a situation like that at someone else's home and them seeing me not sit on their seat and probably thinking, like, why is she not sitting on my seat? Just think my seat's dirty. And it's like, babes, you're not special. My own seat don't get sat on. Okay, honey. Like, it's just awkward to have to explain, like, I just don't like stuff like that.
Well, I can't go to the bathroom with other people there. Like, I have a very shy vagina, and I literally cannot pee if someone else is in the bathroom.
I feel like I'm being judged. Like, watching me, like, the way I'm wiping back to front, back to back.
Judging how much toilet paper you use. Like, oh, girl.
I use too much, you know, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah, I definitely use too much. But I just like to be sure.
What did you say? You like to be sure?
Better safe than sorry. I'm with it, Liz. I'm with it.
Honestly.
No, I could literally be bursting to have a wee. And as soon as somebody comes in, it's like it locks up. And it's like, I can't do it anymore. It's weird. And it's uncomfortable because sometimes somebody's waiting. If you're going into a public bathroom and somebody's waiting on you outside and like banging on the door and being like, can you hurry up? I just have to not pee and then just...
locks up.
Exactly.
Well, as always, vaginas is a great place to end. So thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Don't forget to rate and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And I always get confused with the handles, so I'm passing over to Leanne to finish that sentence.
So on Twitter and Facebook, we're Dope Black Woman, and Instagram, we are Dope Black Woman 1. And we will be back with you next week. But until then, stay blessed and unapologetically black.
All the way black.
Blackity black.
Blacktastic.